Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 5th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In September of 2008, Science Signaling added research to its content and began publishing original research articles in addition to reviews, commentaries, protocols, the database of cell signaling, and other online resources. This made 2009 the first full year of research in science signaling. So in the spirit of year-end roundups and best-of lists, in this episode we'll be taking a look back over the last year at some of the most groundbreaking research published in science signaling. Joining me is Chief Scientific Editor Michael Yeffe. Michael, 2009 was a big year for us. This first full year of publishing research included papers from a wide range of fields. We published papers in plant biology, developmental biology, cell biology, and computational biology. Were there any general trends in the types of articles that were published in Science Signaling last year that stand out in your mind?
I think there were a number of areas in which a relatively large fraction of the papers fell. We ended up publishing a lot of papers having to do with TOR signaling, although they came from many different areas. And I suspect that this represents the convergence of so many areas of biology into regulation through the TOR pathway. A second area in which we encouraged and published a reasonable number of papers involved the dynamical modulation of signaling pathways. I was struck in looking through the papers that we published over the last 12 months at how many of them seemed to stress something that I would have to call contextual signaling. That is, pathways that we thought of as being canonical turned out to be non-canonical, and instead the same core components of pathways were regulated differently depending on the particular type of stimulus that was received. We published a fair number of papers in the area of channel biology and neuroscience. And I think that the convergence of signaling and ion channel behavior with neurological functioning is going to be an expanding area. We published a fair number of papers that had to do with application of mathematical modeling or insights obtained from mathematical modeling on signaling systems of direct medical relevance. In addition, we identified a number of papers that focused on evolutionary aspects of cell signaling. You know, in addition, we also published a number of papers related to human biology, particularly tumor biology, including glioblastoma, breast cancer, and prostate cancer. And I think, finally, an additional area in which we published a reasonable amount was in the orchestration of signaling networks through the combined action of modular binding domains and post-translational modifications, including phosphorylation, sumolation, and acetylation.
Were there any fields that stood out as particularly active or exciting this year? I know you just mentioned TOR signaling. Is that one?
I think the TOR signaling field has literally exploded. And the things that have emerged from this are, in fact, quite remarkable. For example, one paper that struck me in particular was the difference between acute activation of TOR and chronic activation of TOR. There was a paper that we published from James Liao and colleagues which talked about vascular senescence as a consequence of obesity due to chronic activation of TOR signaling. There was two different papers that talked about activation of TOR either in an AKT-dependent manner or an AKT-independent manner. We published a paper from Bill Weiss's group that talked about how EGFR signaling to mTOR in glioma occurred independently of AKT and instead was being mediated through PKC signaling pathways. And finally, a paper from Pan Zheng and colleague indicated that mTOR regulation was involved in the control of aging in hematopoietic stem cells. I think that what all of these papers are indicating is that mTOR plays a central role not only in protein translation and nutrient regulation, but also in things as diverse as aging, endothelial cell biology, and tumor regulation, undoubtedly through things partially dependent on nutrient status, such as autophagy, and likely through things that may well turn out to be independent entirely of nutrient status. I think a second concept that's beginning to emerge, in large part from a combination of computational modeling combined with experiments, has been an increased understanding of how cells integrate complex signaling events in order to arrive at particular decision-making processes. For example, we published a paper from Marcus Covert and colleague that talked about how the cellular NF-kappa-B response to lipopolysaccharide relied upon noisy paracrine signaling. And in a similar way, we published a paper from Francesc Posa's group describing how dynamic signaling in the HOG1-MAP kinase pathway required high basal levels of signaling through the MAP kinase pathway. And so I think that as we begin to model and understand in a deeper way how these signaling networks are orchestrated in order to control the response, it's becoming clear that things like basal activity and noise are not simply events that need to be filtered out, but are actually used to dynamically shape the signaling response. In line with that, one of the papers that I enjoyed the most was a paper from Paul Sternweiss's lab looking at the cytokine response of macrophages to a large number of simultaneous stimuli. What they did was they took pairs of stimuli, which were known to be synergistic, and then added an additional one, two, or three components so that the cell saw either three, four, or five stimuli. And they looked at what happened to the cytokine response from cells in which they added an additional stimulus to the two that were already known to be synergistic. And surprisingly, for the most part, the addition of additional stimuli not only failed to give further synergy, but it decreased the synergistic response of some cytokines, but not of others. So in essence, what it did was to shape the cellular response of the macrophage in a very precise way. I think that this work is likely to have profound impact on how we think about complex outcomes from signaling networks, in the sense that it suggests that signaling pathways are optimized so that multiple inputs can be used to shape a generic synergistic response into one that is more specific for the expression of one cytokine or another.
Those are some of the fields that you found particularly rich this year in science signaling articles. Were there any new methods or any new technologies that really stood out for you as potentially having far-reaching effects in how people do cell signaling research?
There were a number of things that were published along those lines that I think are likely, if they become more broadly implemented, to have profound implications for how we study signaling. A paper from Ron Hayes' group looked at sumo modifications in response to heat shock, and in that case, they used a combined triple SILAC method in which they used either so-called light label, middle label, and heavily labeled amino acid mixtures, and then were able to generate a two-dimensional plot of the responses comparing middle-heavy and light labeling, and go on to use that to figure out what specific targets were enriched and what specific targets were decreased, while at the same time having an understanding of those things that constituted simply background or contamination in the experimental paradigm. A fascinating technology emerged in an article by Andrei Levchenko, in which he was able to use a microfluidic device to interrogate cells in vivo and their signaling response in real time following stimulation with a variety of ligands. If this microfluidic device becomes widely available, I think it provides the opportunity to measure dynamic signaling of many molecules simultaneously in a way that would be accessible to many, many laboratories. Finally, a technology that I think may also have far-reaching implications was the combination of mathematical modeling with specific design of drugs and antibodies, and this was used by Ulrich Nielsen's group in order to identify a key role for the ERBB3 receptor in breast cancer signaling.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell me what sort of things maybe you see on the horizon for the next year in cell signaling research.
I think we're likely to see big advances in a couple of different areas. I think that as we continue to accumulate more and more data, and I guess I should just say that one of the things that I've noticed in general, not just in science signaling, but in many journals, is this is, in some ways, one could say, the year of the data dump. The high-throughput technologies are getting to the point where we're beginning to accumulate larger and larger data sets, and now we're really stuck with the problem of how we analyze all of this data. Mm-hmm. So I expect in the next 12 months or so to see more and more papers coming out in which, rather than generating the data, people are thinking of new ways to combine the data and to go across data sets. Randy Moon and Michael Major wrote an interesting editorial on this very topic related to how it should be possible to further combine different types of data sets in order to increase our understanding of cell signaling pathways. I think that the application of cell signaling to clinical problems is likely to emerge as an area of increased research. The increased abundance of patient samples and the increased understanding of at least a subset of things to look for related to signaling in those samples is likely to see much more direct application within the next 12 months. I think that the interface between inflammation and signaling that we usually think of as belonging within the immune system and signaling abnormalities in cancer are beginning to come closer and closer together, as we saw this year with the discovery of RAS pathway and NF-kappa-B interactions. And so I suspect that these two fields, which have largely been separate, are likely to reemerge over time as an area of joint interest there were a number of papers in Science Signaling that touched on this area. One of the ones that comes to mind for me was two papers by Sarah Courtnage's lab and Gary Bocach's lab, in which components of reactive oxygen signaling originally identified in neutrophils and macrophages were found to be quite important for the development of invadopodia in tumor cells. I think it's quite likely that a variety of neuropsychiatric-type diseases, for example, autism, are likely to have a firmer basis in molecular biology and cell signaling over the next 12 to 24 months. I think recent discoveries in structural biology of ABA receptors is likely to dramatically enhance our understanding of plant signaling. And finally, I think the emerging recognition of non-traditional post-translational modifications, for example, phosphorylation of histidine residues and arginine residues and aspartate residues, as perhaps being important in a variety of eukaryotic signaling pathways, is likely to also receive additional coverage over the next year or two.
Michael, thank you for reviewing the last year in science signaling, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the coming year in science signaling brings us.
I think that it's been a terrific year for science signaling. This has been our first year, our first full year of publishing research papers alongside all of the things that Science SDKE was known for, including signaling pathway maps, perspectives, and protocols. And I would throw out a challenge to our audience to submit even better papers than the terrific group of papers that we've received over the last 12 months.
That was Michael Yaffe, Chief Scientific Editor of Science Signaling, reviewing some of the most groundbreaking research published in the journal in 2009. All of the articles he discussed are available online, and you can find full citations and links to the articles in this podcast's transcript. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.